Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits.
Podcast, podcast, podcast.
Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits Blacker, Gold Bits.
Podcast, 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 podcast. Podcast, podcast, podcast.
Black Heart Gold Podcast,
episode 42. Patrick Vint, Adam Jacoby, joining you from the lovely state of Iowa, where judges are getting thrown out left and right. Jacoby, how you doing?
I am going to refrain from getting involved in talks of politics.
Yes, as am I.
I have some strong opinions that I am not going to elaborate upon in any way whatsoever right now. That's all.
You got a drink in front of you?
I don't, man. I don't. My policy is after a bad night of sleep, which I got last night, like 4 hours of sleep, that I don't drink until I have a really good night of sleep. And usually it's the next day. Sometimes it's like 3 days later. I'm telling you all a lot about myself right now. Anyway, the point is, I'm flying dry today and for the foreseeable future until I get a good night of sleep.
Well, I am enjoying what I call a toy screwdriver, which is Smirnoff vodka and Sunny Delight.
Can you call that like a Fisher Price screwdriver? Or are they going to sue?
I think yeah. I don't think Fisher Price wants to be associated with this podcast.
My first cocktail.
My first cocktail. My first drinky drink. In any case, I've been fighting a bit of a cold, so I figured time to add some vitamin C to my normal diet of vodka. So welcome to the wonderful world of Sunny Delight. It's Indiana week, and that gives us all reason to drink. Always a difficult game for Iowa for reasons passing understanding. And much like last year, we're joined by John from the Crimson Quarry to discuss this week's game. John, how you doing?
Good. Yourself?
You know, we really can't complain, at least not until about 2:30 on Saturday afternoon.
That's when we all turn into Adam Shada and just sit in a fetal position.
His first name's Adam, his last name's Shada. He can't defend the slant, and he can't defend the feta.
Yes.
Yes, those were the days. We won't talk about James Hardy. Well, maybe we will talk about James Hardy. John, do we have reason to be nervous this week? I know Indiana's at 4-4, 0-4 in the conference, but, you know, is this one of those sneaky games where they might jump up and catch Iowa?
Well, I guess for it to be a sneaky game, I guess it would have to catch people by surprise, and it would catch me by surprise. I've probably not been as down on the program in a while. Maybe the end of the Cam Cameron era, maybe Jerry DiNardo's last year, but it's been pretty disappointing so far. The defense, of course, even against the non-conference schedule, has been getting torched and gave up, I don't know, 600 yards to Michigan and something comparable to Ohio State. Now the defense has started playing a little bit better. The offense has really fallen apart. We sort of expected it against Ohio State, but then had to get pushed around by Illinois and even Northwestern, which really is supposedly a team pretty similar to IU, an offensive-minded team. Was pretty sobering about the state of this offense, and so I don't know. I would be surprised if it were a competitive game, but Iowa is a program that, as you noted, for whatever reason, IU has had more than its share of success against over the last 10, 12 years. So it's always possible, but really on paper and considering the way that IU has played over the last 2 or 3 weeks, it would be a pretty big surprise to me if it were much of a game.
How much do you think Indiana misses? Now I'm blanking on his name. Willis. What's his first name again? Darius.
Willis.
Yeah. How much? like, I know that you guys have struggled on offense over the last, 4 weeks or so, you know, conveniently right when Willis blew out his knee. Do you think that's anything more than just mere coincidence?
Well, I think it probably makes some difference. He clearly was the best running back we had, but he's also not, it's not as if he was averaging 6 yards a carry or something. We were struggling to establish the run when he was there, and we've struggled with him out. I think it probably has more to do with the quality of the opposition. Clearly Ohio State and Illinois are two of the best defenses in the conference. The Northwestern game is the one that really troubles me because it just didn't seem like a game where we should struggle to establish anything. They just don't have a particularly good defense. So I don't know. Willis probably has some, he probably has some impact, but really the, I don't know if the running game was that crucial to IU's early offensive success. Maybe the threat of having Willis Pite there makes more of a difference than someone like me can detect. But,
sure.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's the only explanation. It may be part of it, though.
Now, to date this year, you know, Indiana's kind of struggled on the road. I mean, they got mollywopped by Illinois and Ohio State, and they did get a win over the mighty Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky on the road, though. But they've,
you can't just
played,
march into Bowling Green, Kentucky and win. I mean, that's
right.
You can't think about that.
Hey, you throw out the scores. You throw out everything when you go to Bowling Green. They've played pretty tough at home. I mean, they've beaten Arkansas State and Akron and Towson by pretty hefty margins. Well, at least not Arkansas State, but the other two. And, you know, played very competitively with Michigan and Northwestern. This week is kind of technically the last home game for IU this year. Should we read something into that home field advantage, or is that more coincidental?
I think it's more coincidental. I don't think IU played all that well against Northwestern. I mean, Akron is one of the worst teams in the country. Towson is one of the worst teams in 1AA. You know, and the Arkansas State game was a little closer than it should have been. The Michigan game was competitive, but, you know, discounting the helmets, they're really just kind of a middle to lower end team this year. They're, you know, it's just the horrible defense. So
how dare you?
I don't know. It's yeah, I know. But I would have been happy to get the win, but I don't put a ton of stock in the home field advantage. It's it's of some value, but I don't think it's going to make the difference between being a good team and being a bad team.
Sure. Now, from a procedural standpoint, since Indiana's last home game is, you know, home game in quotes, is in Washington, D.C. with Penn State, thanks to that unconscionable deal, this is going to be Indiana's last game of the season at, it's not Assembly Hall.
Memorial Stadium.
Memorial Stadium in memory of an Indiana team that ever won 7 games in the conference. So is this in week 10, in the very first weekend of November, is this going to be Indiana's senior day, senior week?
I presume that it is. I have not seen one way or the other, but rather than expect the Penn State fans, of whom there will be probably 80,000 compared to 5,000 IU fans in D.C. I would presume instead of marching the seniors out there that they will do it on Saturday in Bloomington. You're right, it is pretty early, November 6th, and that's unusual, but, you know, selling your soul for an amount of money that isn't even program-changing money, you know, also doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me. You know, Penn State is a team that IU's never defeated Penn State, but games in Bloomington have almost always been competitive, and the games in State College have almost always been blowouts. So to give that up, especially when IU's never beat Penn State, especially when it was known even back then that this was probably going to be somewhat of a rebuilding year for Penn State, and it might be a year that IU would have a chance to knock them off for the first time, it's just hard to accept that they did that. The other issue, just from a reputation standpoint, if it ends up on SportsCenter, although I don't know that either team is going to get it there. It just looks bad. It's the kind of thing that the only other teams I can remember doing this from major conferences are Northwestern selling a game to Ohio State that they played at Cleveland Stadium back in the early 90s when they were just at rock bottom. And then Duke at some point in the last 10 or 15 years sold a home game to Florida State and played it in Orlando. And it's just, you know, those, not that IU isn't historically with those programs, but I'd like to at least see some effort to get beyond that and to not associate ourselves with Duke or pre-Barnett Northwestern as teams that we're going to emulate. So, yeah, I'm pretty bitter about it. I've been bitter about it for the last 15 months since it was announced, and I'm not getting any happier as the game approaches.
That is kind of rough. I mean, when you're trying to compare yourself with pre-Barnett Northwestern, which even Northwestern fans claim doesn't exist.
Yeah, I know. 1995, college football was invented.
Yes, exactly. What's the before we get into the specifics of this week's game, what's the feel of the fan base on Bill Lynch? Is he going to survive this offseason, or is his time up here?
No one is really sure whether he's going to survive or what he actually has to do to save his job. Our AD, Fred Glass, does not come from an athletic department background. He's never been an AD before. He was an attorney in Indianapolis involved with the Colts and Stadium Authority and all that sort of thing. So no one has a good read on what he's going to do. He made some comments last year that kind of made me roll my eyes as an attorney, talking about how contracts need to mean something. Well, my response is, yeah, a contract means something, and if you want to buy it out after year one or after year four or whatever, and the contract says you can, then you're honoring the contract if you buy him out. But I think he said that just to kind of keep the speculation down last year. Now this year he made a statement a week or so ago, and it was generally supportive, but also not to that level. We didn't hear the contracts have to mean something thing. He's in the second to last year of his contract. And so nobody really knows what's going to happen. But to say where the fan base is sort of complicated because there were a fair number of fans who just never bought into it in the first place. He's not someone who, if there had been an open search after Terry Ebner died, who would have gotten the job. He's not a moron or anything. He's obviously ascended fairly high in his profession, but he got fired at Ball State where he lost 21 games in a row at one point. So he's just, even for a program, IU doesn't necessarily, you know, we're not going to go lure someone away from the NFL, but, you know, he's not, generally IU can do better than someone who got fired from the MAC. We can at least get someone who had some level of success in the MAC. So,
aim high.
Yeah. So it's, you know, he did a fine job in 07 in difficult circumstances, but even then, you know, nearly blew the Purdue game, blew a Northwestern game, and it's, so there are just a good number of fans who've never bought in, and I think there's a lot of frustration. I think it's played out pretty much how a lot of people thought it was going to play out, but I don't know that there was a better option in 07. It was the first time that IU'd gone to a bowl game in 14 years, so what do? Conduct a coaching search while the team is preparing for its bowl game? It was just a nightmare situation, and the timing couldn't have been worse. And, you know, I appreciate what he did in 07 and the effort that he's made, but you know, whether it ends this year or whenever, it's just the sense that it's not going to end happily. Yeah. For Lynch at IU, but I really have no idea. You know, if he goes, if he goes 4-8, is that going to get him fired? I don't know. If he, you know, loses the next three and beats Purdue, is that going to be good enough? I just don't have any sense of it. I do have the sense that if we somehow won two games and, you know, got that prestigious trip to Detroit, that probably would be enough. And, you know, I suppose it should be for, you know, cause it would be progress to some degree in the, you know, a bowl game is a bowl game, I guess. But yeah, I don't have a lot of optimism about the long term, and I don't really think anybody else does.
Now, I know that a coach that got fired from the MAC isn't that attractive and you want to aim higher. So may I suggest a coach that's been fired from the Big Ten?
Yes.
Because I can think of someone who's available.
I'm drawing a blank.
Would the words fight, tremendous, best, try, Hoosier?
He's taking Hoosier Nation to Pasadena, baby.
Well, at least, you know, I love how, you know, is there any Big Ten coach who hasn't made that promise in his opening press conference? I don't know how that took on such a life of its own, Brewster. But at least, if we hired him, it wouldn't be hiring someone who had never been a coordinator or a head coach before. You know, he now has that head coaching feather in his cap. But, that's one that, Minnesota's probably a more attractive job than it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago, whenever it was that he came in. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. And I guess the advantage of Minnesota doing what they did is that they are searching already and can get a leg up on other schools like IU that may end up in the market eventually.
Sure.
Now, we already talked a little bit about the rushing attack, which has been, kind of slow, I guess, this year. But, kind of slow in the way that I'm kind of slow, I guess. Ben Chappell's been pretty fantastic, actually. I mean, 2,400 yards passing through 8 games. He's been a little dinged up. What's his status for this week? And is Indiana just going to basically scrap the run game and just try to throw it every time?
Well, it's definitely been a pass-heavy offense. And Chappell, he's looked really good at times. He's really, though, other than against Michigan, he has struggled in the Big Ten against the tougher defenses, Illinois and Ohio State, and really had one of his worst streaks during the first half of the Northwestern game at a time that IU's defense is actually forcing Northwestern into a couple of three and outs. He had a stretch where he went 1 for 10 passing. And, there are other factors in the quarterback that go into those things. But he's really, as impressive as his numbers are, a lot of that has to do with the non-conference competition. I mean, he's certainly over his career had some good moments against quality opposition. But, I'll have to see him do it against a quality team such as Iowa before I really believe that he's made that much progress.
Who's behind him? Do you guys have anybody with any starts if Chappell gets dinged?
No. The backup is a redshirt freshman named Dusty Keel, and he is the nephew of a former Notre Dame quarterback from the early 80s, Blair Keel. And he's played a little bit. He threw a pick six against Illinois, as did Chappell, and has played a little bit in the Wildcat, but there's really nobody with meaningful experience behind him. There's another redshirt freshman that backs up, or the third string, named Edward Wright Baker. But yeah, there's no meaningful experience behind Chappell, which I guess isn't a surprise. He's played, it was the starter last year and for most of the year before, so there's really nobody behind him that has any experience. And I think that I'm guessing the coaching staff, unless Chappell were really unable to go, is going to keep going with Chappell, figuring that he's better off at less than 100%. They're better off with him at less than 100% than they would be just throwing someone who's never played meaningful minutes in the middle of the Big Ten season.
Sure.
Well, the Indiana receivers are almost, I hate to say that Iowa's finally looking up at a team, but Belcher, Doss, Turner, Bolser at tight end, even Wilson and Willis have been pretty spectacular this year for them. It's this pistol offense. It's, kind of spread and short passes, but it seems to be working for them. Do you expect Indiana to use that against what's going to be a pretty inexperienced Iowa linebacker trio and a secondary that's been kind of burnt here and there by some teams?
Yeah, and one thing you noted, it is really focused on the short passes, and I don't know if that's a feature of the offense or just the way it's worked out for IU, but they really haven't thrown the ball downfield a lot this year. But yeah, there are a number of weapons. Belcher is he is a 6'5" receiver. He's also from Fort Wayne, same town as James Hardy, which is
don't mention his name.
No.
Yeah, I think you guys already brought him up.
Yeah.
I felt like I had to just make sure his presence was acknowledged. But Belcher is, he's a big target and a matchup problem for a lot of defensive backs. Doss and Turner have been very good as well. Bolzer has really come out of nowhere. He wasn't even on the too deep for the opening game, and he ended up catching, I think, 2 touchdowns in the first game and has added 3 more. He's really become an important part of the passing attack. As I said, it's not really gone very well offensively in the last 3 games, but certainly there are a lot of options if the passing game can get going.
And Bolster's only a freshman, right?
He is, I believe, a redshirt freshman, yes.
Yeah.
Wilson's a redshirt freshman.
And Wilson is someone I should have mentioned. He may be the most talented. He hasn't had the number of catches that the other guys have. He may be the most talented of the bunch.
And isn't Hughes a true freshman?
Yeah, he is. Hughes is a receiver. He hasn't played a ton at receiver, but they've used him a lot on special teams, some on kick returns, and he's just kind of an all-around athlete. He was a good high school quarterback here in Indianapolis and is one of the few guys on whom they've burned the red shirt. But yeah, he's played a fair amount. So there definitely are some young guys who are contributing. Antonio Banks, who's now the second string running back, is a true freshman as well.
So, I realize that you're going to sort of have to deal in relative terms here, but compared to the other bad players on your defense, where's the strength on this Indiana defense?
You know, that is a very good question. there's a linebacker named Jeff Thomas, who's a junior college transfer, who has really tuned things up. He's done a really nice job and has emerged as a good presence in the linebacking core. Tyler Replogle, who's been around for a while, is okay. Defensively, the secondary has been toasted quite a bit. The only positive I can say is that there are a couple of former receivers, Matt Ernest and Mitchell Evans, who are in the secondary. So at least if Stanzi makes a horrible mistake, there are guys who are capable of catching the ball back there. But that's pretty bad when the best thing you can say about the secondary as well, if someone accidentally throws the ball and hits them in the numbers, they've got a better chance to catch it. There's a redshirt freshman named Greg Heban, a walk-on, who has all of a sudden emerged and started the last game because of an injury, and he's played pretty well. And Evans, I should say, does have 3 interceptions, so he's one of the few bright spots on the defense. But it's been a struggle on defense, but they have. And that's the disappointing part about the offensive performance against Illinois and Northwestern, is that the defense really did play much better. Not above average or anything crazy like that, but
sure.
At least it has been in a, seems like if the IU offense were what we thought it was, the defense has played well enough to win the last couple of weeks. But of course, that's the way it goes.
Well, that's exactly what I was about to ask, is if there's at least an arc of improvement, from week to week for the defense, it doesn't have to be linear or anything like that. But do you think that that's like, are they at least building on things to the point where they can slow down Iowa to, at the very least make the game competitive into the fourth quarter, and then, you'll see where it goes from there?
Well, that would be my hope, and it's gotten better. They've at least, they're certainly going to give up some long drives and some big plays, but they've at least not in the last couple of weeks been torched to the extent that they had been before. So yeah, I think there really has been some legitimate progress on defense, and you know, whether that'll be enough, I don't know. They played well enough, and it's not, I mean, Iowa's offense is good. It's not explosive, I suppose, in the sense that they're not, you know, not like a 50-point-a-game type team. So I guess there's always the hope that, yeah, they could stay in there, and the defense, I have some hope in the defense that, yeah, if the offense can get back to where they were earlier in the season, then yeah, I feel like the defense is making enough progress that they could help the team stick around.
Now, special teams wise, this kid you got a kicker, this is it Ewald or Ewald?
Yes.
Ewald. Ewald. Has been pretty good. I mean, 9 of 11, hasn't really gone past 40 yards except for once, but has been, you know, pretty solid in the kicking game. Have there been, I know there's been some issues with the punting team and with the kick coverage team. How are Indiana special teams this year? Are they better than they typically are, or there's some holes to exploit there?
Well, I think you summed it up pretty well. Ewald was a pretty well-regarded kicker coming out of high school. He was hurt last year. Everyone expected him to be the kicker as a true freshman last year, but he struggled with injuries, and then Nick Freeland, the kid who stepped in for him last year, has been hurt for most of this year. So I would say that Ewald probably has won the job. As you said, he hasn't really kicked any really long yardage field goals, hasn't really been asked to try much. He did miss a key field goal that I think was from about 40 yards last week that would have been, well, it really was the margin of defeat. But he's, you know, for someone who's not played college football before this year, I've been pretty happy with him. As you said, the kick coverage has been horrible. It's really, really declined the last couple of weeks along with the offense. And the punting has been hit or miss. Chris Hager up is, I think, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think he's a junior, and hasn't really, he's kind of taken a step back each year, if I remember right, although I haven't looked at the numbers to actually be able to support that. But it's been pretty ugly at times.
How's it been ugly? Is he just kicking line drives or shanking them or just never getting a good boot on it? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not been shanking or anything like that. It's just been more not really, you know, just not getting great distance on his kicks. And of course, IU did have a big problem with blocks. They had two consecutive punts blocked against Illinois, which is something you don't see. Oof. Every day, so the protection hasn't been great either, but we haven't seen too many 50-yarders or anyone pinned back or anything like that. It's just sort of been a general struggle, it seems to me, although, like I said, I haven't really looked at his numbers, so maybe I'm selling the kid short.
Yeah.
Well, I love nothing more than a good special teams cripple fight. It sounds like that's what we got at our hands here.
Let me ask you, what kind of punt formation does Indiana use? Is it that like typical like classical style, or do they put the three guys back in front of the punter?
You know, I think it's a pretty much a typical formation. I can't say that I don't think they've done the three guys back, although I do know that they were in some kind of a protect formation in theory when at least one of the Illinois when one of the punts against Illinois was blocked. So I don't know. They're always trying something different. Last year for a while they were doing this rugby punt, not just as an occasional thing, but every time until Akron blocked one and took it back for a touchdown. So after that,
I mean, I don't want to laugh at that, but
the words Akron blocked one and took it back for a touchdown is, wow.
But, you know, that was another one of those road games, so you just, you know, you do when you're in Summa Field or whatever it's called in downtown Akron? I mean, that's a punishing. We won that game. I can't complain.
Even with, You won it even in spite of Akron's devastating 12th man. And that's literally just the 12th guy that shows up in the stands.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So John, how do you see this one playing out this week? What's your prediction?
I am going to say something like Iowa 31, IU 13. I'd love to think that the offense could get it back together, but don't have a lot of optimism that it'll happen. But you never know. It's been a surprising series at times, and hopefully from IU's perspective it will be again.
Adam, what do you think?
31-13 sounds a bit right. I might even be a little inclined to go a little higher on Iowa's end if and only if the weather cooperates. You know, if we have another situation like we did in Iowa City in 09 where the wind becomes a factor to the point that it materially affects the game the way it did last year, then I could totally see it being a closer game, and it wouldn't be all that surprising. Now, but if we're only looking at like 5-mile-an-hour winds or something, I wouldn't be surprised to see Iowa put up, 38, 41, 42 on this Indiana defense, specifically on the secondary, because I think Stanton would be doing a lot of throwing the ball, because either A, Adam Robinson's not going to go, or B, they're going to have him on such a short leash that it'll be 10 carries for him, 10 carries for Coker, and 30, 35, 40 passes for Stanzi. And against that Indiana secondary, I don't think he's going to be putting up David Klingler or Case Keenum numbers or anything like that.
Wow,
but,
way to go into the Wayback Machine for David Klingler.
Well, he's the first Houston quarterback. Like, I was trying to think of Keenum's name, but I always think of Klingler first. I don't think it's going to be that sort of like video game nonsense or anything like that. I could totally see Stanzi throwing four touchdowns and maybe rushing for another this weekend. So I'm looking at the weather right now, and they're predicting 5 and 6 mile an hour winds. So I think it'll be breezy enough that it affects the game a little bit. I'll say Iowa 38, Indiana 13.
That's dangerously close to what I was going to say. I feel like this is almost going to be I wager a dollar. I think that's going to be dangerously close to the old kind of 0-4 offense if Robinson's even questionable, and it sounds like it's almost certain he will be. And given the trouble that Indiana's secondary's had this year, I wouldn't be surprised if Iowa just opened it up and chucked it downfield, especially if the weather is in their favor. I'm saying Iowa 37, Indiana 16. I think they might get a few points based solely on the fact that they've got a decent offense, and Iowa's linebackers are so dinged up that there's bound to be a hole or two here and there. Hopefully, for our sake, not enough that it makes it actually a kind of competitive game, but this series is weird. Stranger things have happened.
Sure.
I will be watching it in a cold, dark room by myself, as usual.
With the are you going to tie the belt around your arm before kickoff, or are you just going to have it nearby?
It all depends on when my heroin dealer gets here.
Pause for editing. 3, yeah. 2, Alpha, Niner.
Let's have some milk. Okay. Well, John, hey, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it, and we wish you the worst of luck until Sunday.
Understood. Thanks for having me.